Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time, right here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. If you guys have questions for John, text him in right now, 710-710, the Busy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get to some of your questions before we let him go. Hi, John.
Hey, I feel good today. I was able to get my two aspirin to get ready for our daily headache with Russell Wilson.
Well, you better get Mark Rogers to send you a big, giant Costco-sized bottle of aspirin. I don't feel like this is going to be going away anytime soon.
No, but also it's like, you know, that's the thing that's so bad about it. I mean, he's got one NFL client, and he's NFL clueless. Because, you know, I mean, you're talking about NFL clueless because, again, you know, with only one client and the guy with a no trade clause, he can't talk to any other team unless he's violating something and he can be sanctioned for that. Secondly, he comes back and he makes it even worse because there's two things that prevent a trade. OK, number one, I mean, that was a nice contract that he signed, $65 million signing bonus, $35 million a year, keeping him signed through 2024. But the problem is, you know, he's held up by that big signing bonus because they take a $39 million cap hit, biggest in NFL history. And there's been 13 teams since 2013 that had more than 20.4%. This would be over 22% tied up in dead money under the cap. And none of those teams made the playoffs. Basically, what happens with the $39 million, and of course, no quarterback, you put the Seahawks back where they were in 2010. I don't think John Snyder and Pete Carroll want to do that. Secondly, he limits the teams to four teams, and most of those teams can't get it done. He brings up New Orleans. They're $64 million over the cap, $64 million, and they can't take on his $19 million salary. You've got the Raiders. I mean, their needs are all on defense. I mean, they need everybody at every defensive position, and they've got some cap issues. The Bears can't garner enough draft choices to make this work. And then March 9th, you know, Dallas is probably going to be off the market because they're either going to sign Dak Prescott to a long-term deal or franchise him. So now his four are really two, and they're not too legit.
Well, I don't know. I thought what was more interesting is that he was just saying, no, Russell's not demanding a trade, and he likes it in Seattle. But if he were to be traded, he wouldn't mind the Cowboys, Saints, Raiders, or Bears.
Well, you can see the issue that Mark Rogers has. He cannot talk to another team under any circumstance, okay? Mm-hmm. So he can't talk to another team, so what's he do is everything through the media.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like it causes problems, puts tension, keeps his client's name in the news, gets Colin Cowherd to, you know, rip Pete Carroll or saying Pete has too much authority and all this stuff. I mean, I give credit to, you know, The Athletic for doing a very good job on that story about the Russell situation. I thought they did a very nice job on that. But in the end, we know the result. He is not going to be traded.
Yeah, it's so weird. One of the things that kind of got to me from that article, because I went through and just kind of took some notes, and we heard a lot more about Russell's legacy, which I know that Peyton Manning and Tom Brady have kind of poo-pooed that kind of thing. You know, some of the quotes from Russ, I'm trying to break away, you know. You know what I mean? I'm trying to break away. I thought that was interesting. Then the other thing about throwing on early downs, you know, it was in the first half, they were number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second half, they dropped down to number seven. I didn't think that was that big of a stat, that, like, that didn't necessarily show that they dropped off and just got incredibly conservative. And I thought it was entirely within Pete's realm to kind of rein things in when they had seven turnovers in two games.
Yeah.
So, the whole thing came off as very – I mean, I bought into it because I thought, like you, John, I thought it was good. It was interesting hearing him storm out, you know, about how he stormed out of the room. And I don't know how much of that was, you know, was hyped up. But still, I mean, it's just so weird to me that Mark Rogers would decide to – you know, and I guess this is a reaction to not getting what they wanted. So now they're going to do it in the media, and I feel like it's making his client look way worse.
Oh, agreed. And because now he looks like a malcontent, which he's not, because you know how hard he works.
Yeah, he's anything but that.
Yeah, and again, it's like, well, he stormed out because they wanted to run the ball more. He had 7 turnovers in 2 games, okay? Right. You know, it's like you had to calm things down because as much as Russ might like to pass more on first down, which he was allowed to do under the let Russ cook idea, is like, you know, he ended up passing too much and he had too many turnovers, all right? Sure, he's right about the fact he gets hit too much, but he holds onto the ball for 2.97 seconds and 14 of the 47 sacks were on him, according to Pro Football Focus. Again, they won 12 games. And, you know, any kind of a trade with Russell Wilson takes his team back to 2010. And that's not the intention, because you think about the idea, each year this team wins more games. And it's been doing that now since they didn't make the playoffs a couple years ago. And they've been winning more games to a point now where it's 12, and it probably should have been more, except for the games where he had the turnovers. So in the end, you know, they still have a Super Bowl contender, but it's like now all of a sudden it makes it look like this is a disaster.
How does it end, John?
I mean, in fact, I'm writing about this right now. How it ends is that Russ just has to make peace with it. It ends in the standpoint that you keep communicating with him like they did with the offensive coordinator hire. I mean, he was involved in that. He, from what I gather, liked the offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron. And so it's like, okay, that's good. You get Shane to make sure he gets enough of the new changes in the offensive scheme to make him comfortable with that. You get as aggressive as you can in this tough free agency period to get better players. I mean, you know, like, for example, I mean, I'm sure that everybody's going to be wanting, you know, the Seahawks, if they can't get Ethan Posick done, to go for Corey Lindley, but he may even make $10 million. They may not be able to afford that. But, you know, you get Ethan Posick or whatever number you can get him, or there's going to be other good centers out there. If Mitch Morris is cut in Buffalo, maybe you bring him in. You may bring, Austin Blythe from the Rams, who, of course, is known by both the offensive line coach, you know, now the run game coordinator, and also Shane Waldron. Maybe you bring in Brian Allen, who used to start at center, bring him in almost close to the minimum. But again, you just try to get, and you start to look at cut guys at guard, because the guard position is not real good, because there's only 2 real good guards available in free agency, you know, and that's Brandon Scherff, who I'm sure is going to get franchised in Washington. And then you've got, Joe Thuney with the New England Patriots. And even you can look at New England and go for David Andrews at center if you can't get the center. And then you start to look at cut guards. I mean, like, for example, I'm thinking that Gabe Jackson is going to get cut for cap reasons with the Raiders. And so maybe you can get him to come up here and work at left guard.
How about Deshaun Watson, John? I mean, I feel like they're saying, yeah, we're not going to trade him. We're just not trading him. Well, that's exactly what you do when you want to pump the price up, right? So, you know.
They're not going to trade him.
Yeah?
Well, he's not going to play, John.
Well, let's put it this way. He's saying he's not going to play right now, but if you're going to be the Texans and you're now one of the poorest run operations in football, are you going to trade him? And if you don't, I mean, you have to see if he's going to go through with his beef. I mean, sure, he can talk now and say he wants out, and I would agree with him. He probably should be able to get out. But again, you have to wait till training camp to see if he's going to hold out then, or wait till the start of the regular season. So if there's going to be any kind of a deal, it's going to be in August. And or maybe late July than it's going to be now.
Well, I mean, I just feel like the less that he talks and the more he digs his heels in, and, you know, that when have we seen somebody go to a season? I guess Le'Veon Bell, the last one, where you have a disgruntled player, whether it was Unique Ngakoue in Jacksonville. It just seems like when the player wants out, it typically happens.
Yeah, I mean, like Kelly Stoffer sat out the 1 year, but it's rare.
That's
that,
true.
Yeah, it's rare that you see a player just turning away paychecks. I mean, again, it's like particularly a quarterback that's the second highest paid player in football at $39 million a year. And, you know, Deshaun Watson is not Le'Veon Bell. I mean, he's, I think, a better business person than that. You can tell what Le'Veon was willing to do. It's like, well, if I'm not going to make much money, I'll just go to Kansas City and sit there and, you know, maybe get a Super Bowl ring and not have to do too much. They took that idea.
Yeah.
Hey, John, is that Deshaun Watson calling you?
Pretty much, yeah.
That was Kelly Stoffer.
Yeah.
He's holding out again. Hey, John, tell me, that was he was drafted by Arizona, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kelly Stauffer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I'm trying to remember, because I played with him in the East-West Shrine game.
Right.
And then we became teammates later, obviously. But he's a really nice guy. I ran into him in Denver a couple of years ago. He's doing national broadcasts on the radio. But
mm-hmm. Good guy.
He is. Great guy. What was his beef there?
He didn't like the contract. I don't think he liked the team. You know, his agent is, ironically, Mike Blatt, who ended up being involved in buying the Seahawks.
Yeah,
you know, with Ken Behring. And so Mike was a hard negotiator. I mean, he held out a lot of different guys. I can remember what Mike Merriweather held out, and he drove a hard bargain.
Did he end up in some kind of trouble or something?
He was at least accused of ordering the murder of a couple people, he was never convicted and all that stuff.
There was something about a crossbow.
Yeah, correct. But nothing that landed him in jail or anything of that nature. So it's kind of behind the glass doors right now, and it's not going to be opened again.
Again, if you've got questions for John, text him into 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. John, we saw this, I guess it's a hypothetical trade proposal from Chad Forbes last night involving Tyler Lockett, saying the Dolphins are interested in Tyler Lockett. Seahawks are interested in the Dolphins' multiple second-round picks plus multiple cheap offensive linemen. It's not complicated. And then he specified, saying, Dolphins get Tyler. Seahawks receive either the 36th overall or the 50th overall pick and Solomon Kindley. Dave and I both looked at it and said, no thanks.
No, that's not.
Where are you at? That's not what I said. I said it was beyond moronic.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
I cleaned it up.
Yeah.
It was rude. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, And let's put it this way. How do you think that's going to make Russell Wilson feel if you take away one of his favorite receivers?
I'd say not good.
Yeah, it's like, it doesn't make much sense. I mean, again, the idea is to grow talent, not give away talent. And, a guard like that, is that really going to help? Again, there's going to be a lot of good players that are going to be available at lower prices that I think are going to appeal. Like, for example, if I'm John Snyder, I'm looking more at the cut guys than I necessarily would the free agents that are going to be out there. Because again, it's like you're going to have more deals for $4-5 million than you've ever seen. And so, you not have to pay the big dollars. And also you get a chance, if you lose a couple players, to get compensatory picks.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I'm just watching Baker Mayfield.
What do you mean you're watching Baker Mayfield?
Somebody was talking about Baker Mayfield being, a significant or, good replacement anyway for Russell Wilson.
Oh, that was a texter who was saying trade Bobby Wagner for Baker Mayfield and trade Russell to the Saints for Alvin Kamara and a second-round pick.
Right. And it just caused me to look up Baker Mayfield's arrest video where
he got caught.
The cop ran him down pretty mm-hmm. easily. But, he's gotten – and look, it's ridiculous, him for Russell, no way. And he gotten a lot better, though. I mean, I have to say, John, Baker Mayfield, maybe it's the commercials, I don't know, but he definitely has turned things around, it seems like.
Well, and of course, that's something that Russell Wilson should look at, is because what made Baker Mayfield better? Well, what they did is that Kevin Stefanski, the coach of the year,
right,
brought in a more of a running offense that less was expected out of Baker Mayfield, because they were going to run the ball exactly much more than he did the previous year or any other year that Baker's been there. And of course, Baker was now with his fourth coordinator in 4 years, and so you come back and whatever. He's had a coordinator change every year. All right. So now you give him more of a running offense. They win. It takes the pressure off of him. And then down the stretch, particularly the last 5 games, he really played well. And so you could see he was adjusting as the season went on to more of a running offense, which, of course, this is what Russell Wilson should be able to experience with Shane Waldron. Because, in fact, I think it's funny. I have to go back, and I've been so busy doing radio hits on Russell all day that I've not been able to do it, and I've been having to do a lot of writing. But in the end, it's like, if I'm not mistaken, all four of the teams that are mentioned by Mark Rogers all ran the ball a better percentage than Seattle did.
Mm. You know, it's funny, is you, and you look at the Cleveland, they were the number two or three run team last year. You know, ask.
Well, they do have Nick Chubb.
Ask.
We have.
Rashad, we don't want to mention that. Yeah, but they had Nick Chubb before, and he was a good player before.
They
got
Kareem Hunt with him, too.
Yeah, they have a really good run game now.
Right.
You make a great point. It's kind of interesting because I did look up that video, and now I'm looking at it as it goes on. This is in, like, 2018. Russell Wilson is sitting down with Baker Mayfield talking to him about his behavior and stuff. You
really?
Remember that?
No.
Yeah, I remember that. And now I'm looking at him going, oh, yeah, that's right. Russ was kind of coaching him up on, you know, and that's when Baker Mayfield kind of came to Jesus and decided to clean things up. And now,
maybe he was just teaching him how to run properly. You've got to do it in a zigzag motion to throw that cop off your trail there, man. You zagged when you should have zigged. That's what he was telling him. hey, John, what's where is Orlando Brown going to end up? He's a guy that played right tackle, then they moved him to left tackle. For 10 games and played really well, and he said it on Twitter, I'm a left tackle, and that's what he wants to be. So where does he end up?
Well, the natural team that you would think would be Indianapolis, but if you're going to be Baltimore, you don't want to trade Brown to a potential playoff team that you may have to face down the line. So I would have to think that he's going to be looking at some other teams other than that if there's going to be a trade. But, I mean, the natural fit is going to be Indianapolis, but my guess is they'll probably sign Andrew Villanueva, who's a 32-year-old, 6'9", left tackle from Pittsburgh they're not going to be able to afford. So that could be the case. Obviously, they're not going to trade him to Pittsburgh because that's a division team. I think, you know, and they'll have to look at the teams in the NFC to see if there's a good fit for where they can get some value for Orlando Brown or for Orlando Brown.
We were talking about Alex Collins. I can't remember if we asked you this, John, already, or we were talking to Moyer about it.
Yeah.
Paul felt like he looked a little bit better as far as his body type and everything, but Seahawks signing him today. I don't know. It felt like he was a little bit of a different running back. But can we read anything into this, considering when it comes to Chris Carson?
Yeah, it doesn't say that Chris is not going to be here, but I think the odds are continued to grow that Chris isn't going to be here.
Yeah.
You know, because now what you're looking at is that they can franchise him at around 8. They can maybe sign him for around 6 or 7. He's going to want 10. Probably not going to be able to get that. And again, there's a lot of running backs that are going to be available. Like, I know that when I talked to Joel Corey from CBSSports.com, you know, the former agent who does a great job doing all the salaries and things of that nature, you know, he's thinking that Marlon Mack might be a good option because even though he had a bad injury last year, you know, he's a talented running back with 1,000-yard experience. And then, of course, you know, I would think they'd stay away from Todd Gurley. I mean, you know, I'll tell you the sleeper in the group to consider, former Seahawk Mike Davis. I mean, Mike Davis filled in very well for Christian McCaffrey last year. Yeah. And I know that in Pro Football Focus's top 100, like he's in the top 80s. And so he's among the 5 or 6 top running backs available in free agency. And I'm sure that they could get him at a very reasonable number. The guy that I would favor, if it's not going to be Chris Carson, because I certainly favor Chris Carson, would be Leonard Fournette. Because I don't know what Fournette's market value is going to be, but I think it's going to be hard for the Tampa Bay to be able to keep him because they have Ronald Jones, and you might be able to steal Fournette for like $4 million.
You know, Mike Davis might not come back here because he was snubbed by C. Raj. Remember that?
Yeah.
Remember C. Raj was mentioning in the
made
running
a list.
Backs?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he didn't mention Mike Davis, and Mike Davis, I don't know if he texted or
he tweeted. Yeah.
Hey, remember when he came here, the chip on his shoulder, as he would say, because he was snubbed by the San Francisco 49ers.
Niners. That's right.
Hey,
that's right.
So what is your take on Fournette? He had a couple of years of success. His rookie year, he went for over 1,000 yards, and he went over 1,000 his final year with Jacksonville. And he certainly blew up in the postseason, but during the regular season, he played 13 games, and he only ran for 367 yards on 97 carries, which is under 4 yards per carry, 3.8. So Are we prisoner of the moment in looking at Leonard Fournette and what he did in the postseason? Is he going to make a bunch of money like Joe Flacco did on his postseason run, or what do you think is going to happen with him?
I mean, I think that I think he can be available at a bargain. I mean, he certainly put himself back on the map with the finish that he had to the season with Tampa Bay. But I can't imagine he's going to get anywhere close to what they're going to get for Chris Carson in free agency. And so I think that that's why I'm thinking that he could be a $3 or $4 million guy. Because remember, you know, once he was let go by Jacksonville, he ended up signing a 1-year, $2 million deal with Tampa Bay. And again, it's like Tampa's got major cap issues too, because they got, you know, so many top free agents that they got to see if they're going to be able to keep. But in the end, I think that what you're looking at is that you know, I think he could be a bargain, and it'd be a great option because he's a big back who's powerful. And remember, he came out as a first round pick in 2017, the same year as Chris Carson.
John Lynch says he has no doubt that Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be the team's starting quarterback in 2021. Do you believe him, John?
Yes, I do now. I mean, okay. I think what they did, I mean, the only thing that would change that is that once they get through all the workouts, the pro workout days in college, you know, if indeed that the Jets are satisfied with, say, Zach Wilson or Justin Fields, more likely Zach Wilson, then they can trade him. But they're not going to trade him until they see the workouts and figure it all out and get the final grades on these top three quarterbacks. And I still think Trevor Lawrence is going to go to Jacksonville. So in the end, I think that if they're comfortable with Zach Wilson, then they can trade him. And that would change the equation a little bit. But if they don't get Sam Darnold, I don't see them making any kind of a trade for a quarterback, and they'll stay with Jimmy Garoppolo.
John, the 206 wants to know, if Dunlap doesn't get signed, who's the next best free agent option for pass rushers?
Well, I mean, they've got to make a decision as far as, you know, Bruce Irvin, if they're going to bring him back for the pass rush. You know, it's going to be, and again, this is where the cut down period is going to help, because, you know, there's some thoughts in Philadelphia that Brandon Graham is going to be available. I mean, Trey Hendrickson had a great year for the New Orleans Saints, and that's where the Saints have no ability to do anything with Russell Wilson, because remember, they had a great draft class in 2017. You know, they hit on like about five or six players, and, you know, they may only be able to keep two or three of them. So there's, you know, like they've got, you know, Marcus Lattimore is a 50-year option guy. We've got to find a way to get him to a contract extension, but there's a lot that's there right now. But Hendrickson had a great season, and of course they still have Jamal Adams as the 9.5 sack guy.
John, we appreciate it. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay, I'll take some more aspirin and get ready.
All right, yeah, baby. Stock up, my friend, stock up. All right, there you go. If you missed any of today's cold hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, do the Mariners have to make a bold move at the top of the organization? Talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Our thanks to the Professor John Clayton for joining us on the program. Coming up, Danny Parkins of 670 The Score in Chicago will join us at 5 o'clock. Talk some football with him and see if people out there are daydreaming about Russell Wilson ending up in a Bears uniform. If I were a Bears fan, I would be. I'll tell you that.
You know, it's funny. I was listening to Dave Wannstedt the other day, and he's a big Mitchell Trubisky fan.
Is he?
Yeah. And there's a few, but I don't think that – who did he get picked ahead of? Was it – it wasn't Mahomes, was it?
I believe it was. Yeah, they moved up to take him.
Trubisky?
I believe it was. I have to go back.
He got picked ahead of Watson also. He got picked ahead of everyone. Wow. Second overall pick.
Wow. Dave Wannstedt's hanging with him.
All right.
I like Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I'm with you there, too. Meanwhile, the Mariners are obviously in the news around the country, although they've been pushed back a bit because of Russell Wilson's latest thing with the Athletic article, I should say. But we talked about this, in terms of filling the spot vacated by Mather, that they, in my opinion, I think you agreed with it, they need to go outside the organization. That's not commentary on anybody in that building. Guys and girls we love in there that would be qualified. I think it's about perception. I think it's about sending a message that we're not going with same old, same old. It's just, hey, we're going to remove that guy, but we're going to put in the guy or girl that's been next to him for 20 years. I just don't think that flies very well if you're trying to really establish this is not who we are. That, what he said, doesn't represent anything about this. I think they've got to bring in somebody from the outside. We had Bob Nightingale on yesterday talking about his article about Jared Kelnick and asked him the question, and he was, absolutely, agree 100%. You have to go outside. Morosi talked about it, saying that the next president, John Paul Morosi, who joins us during the season, always a good guy to talk to, mm-hmm. said he feels like the Mariners president next one needs to be a culture setter.
They need to make sure sure that they set the right tone with this person who comes in, whether it's a Theo Epstein or a Kenny Williams or a Chris Antonetti. It has to be somebody with a long track record in this game of winning and of developing a strong culture. This team needs culture, clearly.
Oh, he threw out that name, that first name, Theo Epstein. That's the one that I think people that are mad at the Mariners, that are cynical about the Mariners, oh, they're always going to stink, they're a joke, whatever, you know. There's a lot of cynicism around this team. I think if they brought in Theo Epstein, that'd change a lot of minds. Not everybody, but that's a guy that got it done in Boston when all they could talk about was their curse, they're never winning, here's why we lose, blah, blah, blah. Then he goes to Chicago, and they've got the curse of the Billy Goat. They're not going to – they haven't won since 1918 or whatever it was, and he brings a World Series to each situation. Now, out here, he wouldn't be the GM, and by all accounts, he doesn't want to be a GM. He wants to be – you know, further up in the front office. So he wouldn't be making the same moves that he did there. But his presence, his knowledge, his history, I think would instill a lot of confidence in cynical fans. But here's Morosi talking about the drought that the Mariners are in would be of interest to Theo Epstein.
The Mariners, while I don't want to get anybody's hopes up here because I think we're a long way from this being a legitimate conversation, I do think the Mariners' situation, both because of the city, the drought in winning, of course they've never won a World Series there, they've never been in one, those kinds of things I think would appeal to Theo in the same way that the Cubs did from a generational standpoint.
Can I ask you this, though? If you're Jerry DePoto and you're rebuilding this thing and you've taken all this time and let's say 3 years from now they win a World Series,
mm-hmm.
if they hire Theo Epstein right now,
he'll get credit.
He would get the credit for it.
Yeah.
Eh, if I'm Jerry DePoto, I wouldn't be a fan of that.
But how important is it? I mean, you know what your role is. You know that you've put these pieces in place, especially if they – I think the casual fan or, you know, somebody who's not really been paying attention would give Theo the credit. But if we're talking about they win a World Series and you said, what, 3 years from now, and it's with all these players that Jerry brought into place and accumulated, he's going to get his due credit. And he'll know, and everybody in that building will know who built this. So is it really that important to him? Do you think he'd, stomp his feet, hold his breath?
No, and I would imagine if Theo Epstein is the kind of guy that he seems to be, he would make it very clear that it was Jerry's deal.
Yeah, those are his guys.
Jerry. Yeah.
Yeah.
My personal favorite would be Kenny Williams.
You like him because?
He was a freshman at Stanford my freshman year, and I remember he drove like a 280Z because he wasn't on scholarship because he was getting paid by, I believe it was the White Sox, who he ended up being a GM for. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he didn't play a lot of football. And he was in Major League Baseball, I think, by the time, I don't know, maybe a year or two after we graduated. But, yeah, I mean, he's done some good things. I want to say he got a jaywalking ticket here one time, and he talked about it on the air or something.
Here in Seattle?
Here in Seattle, yeah.
Really?
I think it was outside the stadium. I remember him talking about it. It was really funny. But, yeah, somebody like that from the outside, I guess, that would, make sure everybody – and I guess you have to do that now for kind of the players too that you want to attract, right? I mean, even Paxton wasn't happy with the comments that were made. So I mean, you're trying to distance yourself from those comments as far as you can and as much as you can, I guess. So yeah, I mean, that'd be great. I'd be happy to have either one of those guys here. But I think it would be interesting, the whole thing with Theo Epstein. Like you said, he's this franchise builder, comes in here, and, you know, maybe they're able to do it without him. But, yeah, he'd be an interesting guy to have in your front office, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think it would bring a level of credibility to the organization even more so. I think it just sends a great message. Hey, they're not messing around. They went with the big fish. He would be considered the big fish. Now, and you guys can text in 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 253. Why don't we worry about the Mariners actually winning one before we worry about who gets the credit? I don't think anybody's worried about credit. I think Dave's throwing that out there as just a hypothetical. 206, how about a woman, regardless of where she came from? It'd be a first and a commitment to change. I don't have a problem with the male or female, whoever's most qualified. My issue is just from within the building, because I think that would be – there would be immediate scrutiny about that, because that person, man or woman, assuming, I don't think it's anybody that just walked in off the street and has been working there for a few months, it's going to be somebody that's been side by side with Mather on some level for a number of years. So the inference would be, well, Why should we believe they're any different? They had to have heard the way he thinks. They had to have heard his opinions over the year. So why should we believe that that person is any different? Maybe they just won't be dumb enough to articulate them in public. And whether that's fair or unfair, I think that would be the perception from the outside. So it's got nothing to do with gender. I think it's just anybody that's been in the building for any length of time working hand in hand with him on some level. And I'm not saying they think that way. I'm just saying that would be an immediate fallback perception, like, oh, all right, so you got rid of this guy, but promoted this man or woman who's been there for 20 years.
Well, maybe there's somebody in, from within that's really good and that would be really good at it. I mean, why are we assuming that just because they're next to Mather that they have those same thoughts?
I don't think they do. I'm saying, but yeah, that would be a perception from the outside that it's like, oh, okay, so it's just more of the same, but somebody who
who's
not going to say it publicly.
Hire the most competent person. So, but yeah, I mean, I guess for optics, yeah, it's going outside of the building, but maybe there's somebody within the building that's really good. So, yeah, but I don't know how they're going to play that, and I don't know how bad this is going to get for, you know, people are worried about free agency and getting, you know, and the younger players and those kinds of things, and I think everybody's made it pretty clear that nobody reflects, you know, nobody has the same views as what was said during that Zoom meeting, so... but yeah, you're right. Probably going outside would be a better look, and that's important these days.
Well, and a look to somebody who's not in the organization, as we talked about free agents. You just brought that up again. If you're a free agent looking from the outside, and we heard like the perception from Garrett Cole, a guy who doesn't really know what's happening. He's just read it, so he's just deeming it. Oh yeah, do yourself a favor, go read the story about that guy from the Mariners, and it becomes about the organization as a whole. So I think there could be free agents that might just view the organization like, oh, so you had this guy there for a quarter century, and now you have a problem with him. He had been in trouble before, obviously, with the harassment issue that went on there with Dr. Lorena Martin and all of that stuff. So it's not a good look, certainly. And now it feels like in order to really, really affect change in the way they're perceived, you got to go outside. And again, I want to emphasize this has got nothing to do with how I feel about anybody that's currently in the building, because I do think there are qualified candidates in the building. But because of how this thing is being viewed, I think hiring from the outside goes a long way.
Yeah, if you're trying to change the perception of your franchise, absolutely.
Yeah. So and it does. Perception's reality in a lot of cases. So we'll see what they do there. But I think it's a big move. I think they've got to take their time. People texting in, there's no way Stanton's cheap behind hires Theo.
What do you think he'll cost?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think he's a guy that would be in demand, so he's got a job in the front office of MLB right now. I can't. What is his title? Do you remember what his title is, Mike?
It's some sort of advisor.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, not exactly like Griffey, but kind of advising and helping out.
Yeah.
I know that was very specific.
Yeah.
I'll look it up.
That's cleared it all up for me. Thank you very much.
But he does things.
Yeah, I think he's financially in a great spot regardless, and probably could say, well, I don't know if I want to do it, but if I did, let me just throw out this huge number and see if they...
I will say the actual description is no less clear either. The official title is a consultant to on-field matters. So I think I explained it just as well as his official title.
I feel like we're talking about a passing game coordinator again.
Could be.
Wasn't
there a baseball version?
Wasn't there somebody hired like a person people? They're like,
yeah, there was one
team. I'm the people person.
It was like an HR role, but it was
some very
strange
NFL team, right?
Yeah, it was NFL.
Yeah. It was. I want to say
was it Washington?
I thought it was Tampa.
Was it Tampa or KC or
Washington football team?
I can't remember. It was kind of a goofy title that sounded like it was just HR, but it was a different title. But anyway, all right. Coming up. Really, why bother with reality TV when the NFL is the best soap opera around? You'll hear what we're talking about when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
And you know a lot of people in this life make decisions based upon if they need the money or not. If Deshaun Watson doesn't need the money, then you do not play.
Yeah, if he's willing to forfeit this year's salary or a portion of this year's salary to get out of Houston, then go for it, brother. I'm backing 100%
and supporting. It's a lot of money, though.
Well, I mean, it is a lot of money. James Harden, and I know it's a different sport, told the Houston Rockets, you can keep that $100 million.
There you go. There's Keyshawn Johnson on his radio show this morning talking about Deshaun Watson.
Things Bob Stelton will never say.
Sit out the entire year?
You can keep your $100 million.
No, I wouldn't say that. I'll take your $100 million if you don't want it. That's what I would say.
Right.
Yeah, it's always easier to you know, spend other people's money or tell them not to take money or do this, do that. I mean, it sounds like he's made up his mind. There's literally been no story, no comment, nothing that has said anything to the contrary. In fact, everything sort of just cemented, including the most recent story that he had a conversation with the new head coach and made it very clear he does not want to be there. Where you're thinking he had a conversation with the new head coach, and hey, they feel like they made some improvement. They feel like they gained some traction there. There's an understanding. You thought maybe you'd hear that coming out of the meeting?
No. No, nothing. That's what you say when you're negotiating. I just don't see this going down the way that everybody else does, that Deshaun Watson is just going to sit out this year. I feel like they're going to end up getting something pretty spectacular for him. I like what Keyshawn...
So you think he's gone?
Yeah, I think he's going to end up somewhere. No. I think somebody will work out a deal. I mean, after a while, look, you see that he's serious and he doesn't want to be here. Why would you keep him? Why would you? But I mean, again, it's just amazing. I mean, look at, Jadeveon Clowney, J.J. Watt, DeAndre Hopkins, Dwayne Brown. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the fifth. And these are good players. These are signature players. They want out. It's amazing. But I like what Keyshawn Johnson said in the beginning. That you don't do things for money. And it's true. I mean, if you do things for the right reasons, the money will come. And I thought that was very wise of him. And so, with Deshaun Watson, maybe he's committed to that. Maybe he seems like a very down-to-earth, old-school guy, Deshaun Watson. Just everything about him I've liked since his days at Clemson, watching him. It's just he's a champion, so I hope it works out well for him, because it'd be one thing if it's just him. But again, guys, we know Dwayne Brown is one of the best dudes I've ever talked to. I really like that guy. He's just a solid person. And if he didn't like it there, a lot of people didn't like it there. I wish Deshaun Watson the best.
Well, and Clowney, for his part, as much as we can talk about what he didn't produce and the sacks and this and that, you never heard a negative comment about the guy as an individual. That locker room loved him. The coaching staff loved him. He loved them. I mean, there were no issues personality-wise where he was a malcontent or, this guy, acts this way or acts that way. So, production, we can talk about that. But in terms of being a personality problem, he was not. He was a guy that didn't want to be there.
I was like, yeah, look at John Lynch coming out for his boy. Finally, he's given Jimmy the respect and showing him love. And then I thought about the quote a little bit more and I read it again. And Jay, you've cared about people before. You've wanted people badly. You've been in love before. Does that sound like a quote of a guy that is so into somebody, right? This isn't like banging on the table, Jimmy's our guy. We've heard organizations talk about quarterbacks they want and they love. It's so crystal clear. I just don't get this feeling that San Francisco is really into Jimmy and really in love with him. I think they're saying the right things, and either they're going to see how this draft shakes out. And I still wouldn't be surprised if they decide to move up.
It's Diana Rossini on with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin talking about the 49ers, and saying kind of what we've been saying, or we said to Clayton the other day. It feels like they're just sort of settling for Jimmy G because they couldn't come up with a better deal. I mean, the word this whole offseason is they were looking to make moves and bring in somebody else, and it feels like they're sort of like, all right, I guess we'll keep him. Not like, oh, no, this is our guy. We're not moving on from him. What are you guys talking about? You know what I mean? There's no. She's right. There's no passion behind their statement about him. There's no passion about him being, this is our guy. He's an elite quarterback. He's our franchise. It's, all right, yeah, we'll go ahead and keep him. It just seems lukewarm.
Well, the 49ers, it says, reported on Pro Football Talk, John Lynch said recently that he has no doubt that Jimmy Garoppolo will be the team's 2021 starting quarterback.
But does that infer some level of love this guy?
I have no doubt.
I have no doubt he'll be the 21 that it's not he's our guy. He's our franchise guy. He'll be here for the foreseeable future. No, this year he'll be our guy because we couldn't come up with anything else.
So if I go home tonight and say to Shannon, I have no doubt that you're going to be my wife tomorrow. Rest of my life.
Well, no, the rest of my life. That's different. He didn't put that on there. If you said, I have no doubt you'll be my wife for the entire year of 2021.
The team's 2021 starting quarterback.
You are my starting wife for 2021.
You're the starter.
I have no doubt you're going to start this entire year, Shannon, as my wife.
Was that, speaking of ranking, was that Bridesmaids where John Hamm says, you're no longer my number three.
Yeah.
I think all five of those guys will be gone by 10. It would be surprising to me if one was still there. I think the Cowboys, I thought about an offensive lineman like Rashawn Slater from Northwestern to really help out that line, help out Dak Prescott and Zeke as well, Zeke Elliott running the football. But I think corner is such a neat area. Sertan's a plug-and-play corner, fundamentally, technically sound. Cover skills aren't as good as Caleb Farley from Virginia Tech, but Farley opted out. Farley's not the tackler that Patrick Surtain the second is. So I went with the corner, but I very easily could have put an offensive lineman in there. I did not really consider a quarterback for Dallas, mainly because I don't think they will, and I think those other five quarterbacks will be gone by that point.
Patrick Surtain the second. Boy, that makes me feel old. I remember watching his dad play. Jeez. But that's Mel Kiper talking to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, talking about the Cowboys not drafting a quarterback, even with the Dak Prescott situation, which still interesting. I'm wondering what's going to happen there. I mean, is he going to get the big long-term deal that he wants or in terms of the money, or are they going to get the what they want, or are they going to trade him, sign him and trade him? You're going to trade him here? Russell goes to Dallas? What's going to happen? What's going to happen to Dak, Dave?
I like Dak Prescott, man. I hope he comes out healthy.
I like him, too. I don't like him as much as Russell, but I think he's a good quarterback.
I do, too. His numbers are really good. I don't know why. It just seems like people don't respect him or talk about him in the same breath as some of the better. I mean, he's like a 68% completion guy, mm-hmm. which is, to me, amazing. And, you know, he's always had good touchdown-interception ratios. So how about Mel Kiper, man? I've got somewhere on a video on my phone of him 33 years ago talking about me when the Seahawks drafted. Yeah, my dad sent me a tape that he found somewhere. I mean, he's like, he's plug and play corner. I mean, he's been saying that stuff. He loves this stuff, man. Looking at this stuff for years.
How many years ago was it?
It was 33 years ago.
We're going to need that audio, by the way.
34 years.
That's going to find its way into the show somehow.
Was he a big deal then, or was he working his way up?
I was just like, who's this guy with the goofy hair?
Yeah, I don't know that I knew who he was back then. Well, of course, that was before I was born. So.
I've told this story before on this show, so bear with me. But he came on our show about 6-7 years ago with mm-hmm. Danny and Jim, and I mentioned my name, or Danny said something about my name, and he remembered the quarterback of the team, Arizona's quarterback, that I ran out of bounds when I blew my knee out.
Oh, really?
A guy named Alfred Jenkins. Yep, you were running Alfred Jenkins out of bounds, and Vance Johnson took your knee out, and I didn't think you were going to make it back. I mean, it was ridiculous,
the amount of
detail. No. He just remembered when I got drafted. He remembered the story. The guy's got like a computer-like mind.
He's like you with random football plays in various seasons and moments. Well, the Seahawks.
Yeah, but I can't remember a guy's name. I just saw on the internet. But I mean, it's pretty amazing what he's done for all of these years. Mel Kiper is just a legend.
All right, this happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up, why would Russ want to go to the Bears? We'll get the Chicago perspective from Danny Parkins here. He's going to join us next here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.